This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids.
Here with Carmen Vitale from Fox Sports.
I am joined now by Carmen Vitale, Fox Sports NFL reporter.
Carmen Vitale of Fox Sports.
Joining us, it is the NFC North writer at FoxSports.com. It's Carmen Vitale. How are you doing, Carmen? Great to have you.
Welcome to a special edition of the Chicago Football Show. I'm Scott Baer alongside Carmen Vitale.
We need to score points in this league, but Chicago is and always will be defense, and that needs to be part of this team's identity.
Robbie Triano on the ones and twos putting together an introduction for our next guest as we broadcast live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We're happy to see her in studio. She's here. Carmen Vitale, our friend who writes for Fox Sports. We love talking ball with you. And
I get like the royal treatment coming in here. And that also makes me realize like I'm justified in being how tired I am.
Oh, 100%. But that was the work of Robbie there on,
thanks,
on the
Robbie.
Open,
so. Really, he was on the teleprompter the other day when I was in Marquee Studios doing some reads for them for our show. And so he was expertly running the teleprompter.
I had to do my best.
No,
thank you.
I did it in like what, one take, two takes?
One take.
It was all
one
take.
One
take, Jake.
It was all
say.
The prompter. It was all the prompter.
Yeah. That's amazing. And also, tell us about what you are doing at Marquee this year for people who want to know, because I know the show's name has changed a couple times. I see it, but I just want to get it right.
Well, Marquee is now partnering with the Chicago Bears, and so they have their official pre and post game this year. And as part of that, we have the Chicago Football Show, which airs once weekly on Marquee, on the Marquee Sports app. It is also on YouTube. There are clips put online. It's everywhere that you want to consume. It's also in an audio-only format on wherever you get your podcasts. So me and Scott Baer, Marquee's Bears insider, we
Bear.
Do the show together.
Bear.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, honestly, and it's really special to me to be able to kind of hone in on the Bears, which is, you know, this is the team I grew up with. This is the market I grew up in. So I might cover the league for Fox, but this is a way for me to kind of concentrate on where I want to be.
Well, I think that it's important, though, to talk to you, not just about you being from here, yes, but you also have an ear with a lot of people in the league. You have an ear to the ground. Mm-hmm. And what I think about what we talk about with the Bears, I also consider how much you're talking to other teams and you're getting their impressions of what is going on and whether or not people like it. It provides a lot of perspective is what we can expect to see.
Yeah, that first part being the key operative sentence or part of the sentence.
I was looking at something you had said. I was trying to search for something particular during the game yesterday, and I was looking for something and it ended up being like I came across what you had said last year about the Bears' likelihood of making the playoffs and how much hell you got. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm going to give you this moment to point out that the Bears did not make the playoffs.
And they kind of finished exactly how I thought they would. And I'm not here to say, like, I told you so on anything. But
don't worry, we'll say it for you. She told you so.
I'm saying it. Like, sometimes Carmi tells you the truth that you don't want to hear yet.
What covering the league and being part of different franchises, I worked for the Buccaneers for 6 years. I was internal, though, and they afforded me a really cool perspective. I was so close to all of it. I mean, I'm right outside the draft room when they're drafting their players. I was in and out of the coaches' offices, picking their brains, annoying them is probably the better phrase, about all different things, and them teaching me, you know, the ins and outs of not only scheme and what's going on the field, but then you also do get to see the things like the decisions the head coach has to make, which is everything, not only just, you know, when they're going to practice, how they're going to practice. It's who sits where on the plane. Like, there are so many micro decisions that go into stuff like that. And so having this perspective, it gives you, and I was with the Bucks when they won the Super Bowl. So, like, I've seen a Super Bowl team from the inside out, and it's really, what?
No, I just want to know if you got a ring.
I did get a ring.
Ah,
I have a ring.
That's amazing.
I have a ring. It has my family name on it, which is amazing. My dad cried when he saw it. It was awesome. But that affords me an outsider's perspective, is what I'm trying to say, of I know what it takes to win in this league. I know what it takes to have a functional team. And if I don't see those markers that I kind of look for, I'm going to tell you, I don't want to sugarcoat things. I don't think that's doing a service to the fans by setting their expectations high and sugarcoating everything, which I think happens quite a bit sometimes. And I want to make sure that I'm telling you what I actually think. So it's not, I told you so. It's, I want to tell you, I want to be authentic in how I cover this team and any team.
Yeah. I mean, you're not lying. That's it. You know, and when
I won't,
you see,
I won't lie to you. I promise.
When you see something, I think it's fair that you report back. So what were you looking at in this particular preseason game? What were you looking for when you knew the starters weren't going to play on offense and defense?
Honestly, my attention then went to the coaching staff, and it went to just kind of the procedural things from that end. And you look at how they're managing things. I talked about how the head coach has to make all of these certain decisions that goes, that pertains to who's going to be down on the field with the players, who's going to be up in the booth, the eyes that he wants up there, or the guys that, you know, really get the players going down on the field. Those are all decisions that he's making. So you're looking at kind of those types of things. You're looking at, even when you're like the substitutions and like the play-by-play cadence of everything, I'm really looking to see, is that organized? Does Ben Johnson seem to have command over this team? Does this team understand where they're supposed to be, how they're supposed to be there, how they're supposed to get there? Do they have the intensity that he is trying to instill in this culture, him and Dennis Allen for that matter? And I did see a lot of that. Now, in the preseason too, especially when you're not playing your starters, think about it. These are all guys that are vying for a job. Like this is, they have every motivation in the world to be going out there and being on their P's and Q's and to be really intense and to show the coaching staff and the guys upstairs what they can do. So if you can't, if they don't look motivated, if there's not energy on that sideline, that is a red flag to me. But that's not what I saw with the Bears yesterday. You saw the gif that's now going around of Ben Johnson, like after they get the goal line stop and he's like I can't say it on radio, obviously, what he's saying, but it's great. It's great. And you like to see that. And that's the other side of the ball too. So he's, you know, he's taken to not just the offensive side, but the defensive too.
I mean, he's the head coach. So that's the thing. Now I'm going back to what you just said, talking about your time with Tampa and what that taught you as far as the inner workings. Mm-hmm. My question is very simple. Are the Bears functional?
I haven't been inside. Like I haven't been in the front office. I haven't been in the hallways. I haven't walked past those coaches' offices to see what they're talking about, anything like that. But I have to say that this entire offseason, and why I am the most optimistic about the Bears I've been in years, is because on paper, they are doing everything right. They are, you know, like everything seems very, you know, the messaging is so consistent. Like when you talk to Ben or you talk to Dennis Allen or you talk to one of the players, like starter or not, they are all saying the same thing. And getting everybody on the same page is half the battle when it comes to this kind of stuff. When you are changing coaching staffs, overhauling schemes, all that kind of stuff, just having the messaging be the same is a green flag. We're going to go off flags again. It really is encouraging to me because that's not what I saw covering this team the last few years.
I think that is important to point out because I feel like that's a lot of what we talk about to you specifically. Mm-hmm. Is like, for example, on the Bucks team, a lot of it is a collection of best practices.
Yeah.
It's checklists. It's having checklists be timed at certain times of the year. This isn't sexy.
No, but when you consider,
but when it's you really can, not.
But when you consider the adjustments that teams like the Bucks were able to make to help get them to win a Super Bowl, that's why I feel like it's so important to discuss. And I think also, you were there for the beginning of the Dan Campbell era.
Yeah,
yeah. People were questioning it when they started the Lions 1-6. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of people didn't know. You know what that first year is like.
I did under Ben. Like, and this was also, you know, after Anthony Lynn had gotten fired as their offensive coordinator and Ben got elevated from within, very untested, did not, you know, Detroit wasn't super familiar with their tight ends coach after 1 year under Dan Campbell. And this was, you know, they went 3-13 that first year under Dan. And so justifiably, they had to make changes. Ben Johnson comes in, they start 1-6. I have to stress how much Detroit was disinterested as a fan base, disinterested, very upset. Like, what did we just do? We're the laughing stock of the league. You know, Dan Campbell's talking about biting kneecaps. We've won four games, you know, when they were 1-6. I'm like, they've won four games in the last year and a half. It was a really hard time. But what I saw when I was there, because I was in the locker room when they were 1-6, it was a across the board belief from players to coaches. And I have a few friends on that staff too that were like, we know we got this. we believe in ourselves. We believe in Dan. We believe in the coordinators we have here. We believe in the system. It's going to work. And it already has internally. And then it was just a matter of getting everyone to see it externally. And so that's what I'm kind of looking for here, and why I keep still preaching patience, despite the fact that, again, I will repeat it, I'm very optimistic about the Bears this year. But that doesn't mean it's going to translate right away. And I want people to have patience with this team regardless, because what they are doing is no small feat. And there's so much that goes into this. We've heard Ben Johnson talk about how complex the system is. It's more complex than what he installed in Detroit at the very beginning, as it should be. But I think that's going to mean that this is going to take a while to get going. But the preseason game I saw a lot yesterday, even though it wasn't the starters, from what I've seen in practice too, being up at Hallis like the last few weeks, the defense is more than capable of kind of insulating against the learning curve that the offense is going to have. And that is really, really important.
Carmen Vitale, the Fox Sports NFL reporter, also the co-host of the Marquee Sports Network's The Chicago Football Show podcast, joining us here on Raheemy and Harris talking Bears and everything insulating the Bears, which would be the rest of the NFC North. And I'm really curious as to what your thoughts are on who's doing what in the North this season.
I've dreaded this question when it comes up every single time, because I don't know what to make of this division. This is a really tough division. And every single team, though, has some very crucial question marks. So you have Detroit, you have the coaching exodus in Detroit, because it's not just the coordinators. They brought, each of those coordinators brought assistants with them, too. You look at Ben Johnson here with Antoine Randall-El as his wide receivers coach. Aaron Glenn has multiple guys up there in New York with him. So there is going to be a learning curve there, I think, for Detroit. And then you have the Minnesota Vikings, who have done their best to quarterback-proof their team, because they have they're so solid roster-wise. And the biggest question mark is just J.J. McCarthy. How good is he? How quickly can he be good? But you also have maybe the best developer of quarterbacks that we've seen in the last couple of years in Kevin O'Connell developing him. So I'm optimistic about that, but it's still a huge question mark. And then the Green Bay Packers, they're always a threat. They disappointed themselves last season despite making the playoffs, you know, his first round exit. And I got to talk to some of those guys on the defense over the summer at a pass rush retreat I went to. And it was Rashawn Gary and Kenny Clark telling me, you know, we're now comfortable in this scheme. It was a scheme overhaul last year. So they were still at the trade deadline. They trade away Preston Smith because they're still trying to figure out what guys go where halfway through the season. So now they're that much more comfortable. And I expect that defense to really be solid and to help the offense a little bit more than it did. So to add a long-winded way of answering your question, Marshall, I don't know what to do with this division. I think I wouldn't be shocked if any four of these teams won the division.
Do you fall in line on the idea that this is the best division in the NFC, which just happens to be cross-matched with the best division in the AFC and the AFC North? Does that align? Yeah. So I could see everybody in the NFC North having a worse record than last year, but actually being better than last year's teams.
I have talked about this quite a bit because I don't know where these wins are coming from, where it's not going to take 15 wins to win this division again, because I don't know where those wins are going to come from. You have to play the AFC North. You have to play the NFC East. And then this is a really tough schedule for all four of these NFC North teams, who are also going to cannibalize each other. So I'm not going to be surprised if whoever ends up winning this division wins it with 12 games or with 12 wins. And if that's the case, then all of these teams to me are capable of 12 wins. So how does that shake out? That's what makes it. Yes, I said it. I said capable. We're all capable.
Okay.
No, she's
the
right.
The roster here in Chicago, I picked the Bears, I think, still to finish fourth, if you like put, you know, what to my head and I have to figure it out. But that doesn't mean I don't think that if things take less time than I think they're going to, this is a roster that's capable of that. So then it gets really murky as to who ends up at the top.
No, I agree with you, because number one, it may be Ben Johnson's first year, but it's not the first year for the front office. And we've said that. And then number two, I think a big piece of it is not just the difficulty of the schedule, but also that the variance probably comes with the Vikings.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest variance is not going to be from the Lions. They're getting healthy, and that's for them a massive amount of people.
Yeah.
But when you consider the Vikings and then having the Addison suspension, and then also trying to figure out what Green Bay wants to do, you know, that's a part of this. Is I feel like they do have some roster deficiencies, especially in the receiving room. Do they answer that in the draft? You know, and how are they putting that together in
the
a way?
The first
that's
preseason game, they might have Matthew Golden had a pretty good game, and he's had a pretty good camp. So
that was a fired up crowd, you know, to hear his name. And I consider all of that when it comes to trying to figure out how the division shakes out as a whole. And additionally, what that means is as far as the, you know, is it going to be a learning curve again for J.J. McCarthy? I don't think it's going to be like Sam Darnold, where he came in and was a different man. He still had that experience in the league. And unfortunately, J.J. didn't.
Right. But he does have, I mean, the best thing I think Minnesota did this offseason was go and get Ryan Kelly and Will Fries for the interior of that offensive line. Because if you could have pointed to a deficiency on that roster, again, a roster that won 14 games last year, it was the interior of the offensive line. And it was a testament to the growth of Sam Darnold that he was able to stand up against some of that pressure and still step up in the pocket and climb it and all that other stuff. But it wasn't necessarily warranted. And now that they went out, I think Ryan Kelly could have ended up, could end up being like the steal of free agency this year. And because it was just, he was such an afterthought, but he's such an experienced center. You combine an experienced center with a young quarterback, which is what I was begging the Bears to do last year, but they finally did it. We're happy. I think that that's a really good recipe for developing and having multiple quarterbacks as his coaches, like Kevin O'Connell, former quarterback, but then they also have Josh McCown in that quarterback room. Those are all really constructive voices for him. And then having a veteran center that can take stuff off of his plate, make things easier, on top of a play caller that can also make things easier. I don't necessarily know. J.J. McCarthy does not have the experience. He was green coming out of college as it was, but he does have, like, he's clay at this point, and he's being molded by the best possible people and being put in the best possible situation that you could be as a young quarterback.
We're talking to Carmen Vitale, the NFC North writer and now NFL writer for Fox Sports. She's also on Marquee doing their football shows. And I also want to ask you just about what the league, at least the impressions of what the league has seen so far, not after yesterday, but just so far out of Ben Johnson being here, and what that is going to mean for this group of individuals and who they acquired.
I mean, Ben Johnson has been respected in this league for a very long time. He is a guy that you try a little extra hard to game plan against when you're playing him. And that was true of him as the offensive coordinator in Detroit. You knew that he was going to throw a lot of different looks at you. His offenses are ever evolving. He is very well respected as one of the top offensive minds, especially outside of that kind of McVay-Shanahan tree. He doesn't come from that tree. And I think we think of, like, again, Kevin O'Connell, Kyle Shanahan, McVay, Mike McDaniel down in Miami. Those are kind of like the premier offensive minds of the league. But then you have Ben Johnson. And I think that because he's kind of zigging where others zag in a way, it's a really fun dynamic. And I think a lot of people are, again, he's coming in with this track record. He was a very highly coveted head coach in this cycle, a very highly coveted head coach in the last cycle. So I think a lot of people can be sold on the Bears league-wide. It's not hard to sell the Bears at this point. I think the issue comes in where you see, well, you know, there were reasons to sell, you know, you could sell the Bears at other points. And, you know, the off-season champ thing, that's followed them, I think, more than ever before. This off, like, the, you know, being the off-season champs. And I think people kind of like, well, you know, that's the Bears. And like, that has become part of the Bears' identity, you know, across the country and across the league, is like, well, they're the off-season champs. Like, so many people I've talked to have mentioned that. And I'm like, yeah, like, I don't really have, you don't have a rebuttal for that. Like, it's like, that's, everybody gets really excited without having seen it. And that's kind of always been my thing. Let me see it. What?
Oh, I'm sorry. Ray talked to us.
Oh,
Ray tells sometimes us what we need to mention to the listeners while we're talking.
No, but yes, to your point, I think that has become the Bears identity, just as in the Cowboys' identities hasn't been to the Super Bowl in however many
years. 30 years.
30 years.
Not even the Super Bowl, the NFC
Championship game. Yeah.
Like, the Bears have been to those more recently than the Cowboys have.
Sure have. Yeah. That's...
as we all pause and shake our heads.
I do think that, you know, and then you also add in Dennis Allen to this. And that's one thing that I want to go back to, too, not to keep harping on my experience in Tampa, but I've seen this come up on social media a couple times when I made mention of this. And I think there's a common misconception that you can't have like two head coaches, quote unquote. Having two head coaches isn't the same as having two quarterbacks. Like, if you have two, you have none. That's not the case with the head coach. If you have your head coach, play calling head coach, one side of the ball, Ben Johnson. If you are, if you allow, you have to allow Dennis Allen to be almost the head coach of the defense, because as a head coach, with all the other decisions I talked about, you cannot physically spread yourself that thin and expect to be good at what you were good at before. So I think seeing that Ben Johnson has really let Dennis Allen take the reins, that's what happened in Tampa during that Super Bowl year. Bruce Arians had absolutely nothing to do with the defense. It was all Todd Bowles. And so it worked. They were, of course, in communication with each other. They were playing off each other. The Bucs, down the stretch of that Super Bowl year, finally started to like play complimentary football because Brady was now comfortable in the new scheme and this, that, the other. But it worked because Bruce only had to worry about the offense. Todd only had to worry about the defense. And there was the in-game situations and all that too, of course. But you need to allow your coaches, especially ones that have been head coaches and have that experience. And Dennis Allen, whatever you think of him as a head coach, can call a darn defense. You need to let him do his job, and you can't micromanage him. So those are the things that, like, they're both very well respected. So let them do their jobs.
That is Carmen Vitale. She reports on the NFL for Fox Sports. You see her on Marquee Sports Network as well. We've got another segment with her joining us in studio. We're excited about it. Talking about the conversation covering Caleb Williams as well. We asked him about that last week on our show. So we want to get your thoughts. That's next. More Bears with Carmen. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris. Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
All right, so there's this video. and I think
it's
some
hilarious.
Yeah, some yeah. National places, I think.
They blew it up.
So when people say it's some indication of what's happening to you at camp, what do you, I mean, I say about that?
I just laugh at it. It's, I look at them and I laugh at them, as always.
That's Caleb Williams talking about the viral video, the net drill, which isn't a game. It's not a practice. It's just a drill. This is Rahimi and Harris on 670 The Score. Happy to be joined by Fox NFL reporter Carmen Vitale in studio. We're happy to see you.
I'm happy to be here.
Weren't you there for the net drill?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like nobody even, like, whatever. I did not make anything of it.
No. And like Caleb being annoyed with it, like, yeah, all right. Because he didn't hit where he wanted to. But that's a very common drill. Every team that I've ever been around has done it. That or the trash can game.
Right.
Where they put a trash can like in the corner of the end zone and you have to fade it in there, and whichever quarterback can, you know, get it in there the most gets whatever. They place like little minuscule bets or whatever.
Or more than minuscule, depending on the quarterback.
I know. I wasn't trying to get anybody in trouble.
Okay, my bad.
But no, I mean, and so I don't know. Who knows? Maybe during that drill they had like a friendly bet. Who knows?
Well, and I think that's the point. I likened it to, am I concerned if a guy is missing threes in pregame warm-ups before the game? No. Mm-hmm. I'm only concerned when they look hurt.
And that's a drill where they don't even, like, grab the laces or anything. They're just literally, it's rapid fire.
Right.
It's as it comes. And that's why I was like, why are...
It's like Papa Shot. It's
as it kind of got
shot.
More and more attention on social media, I was like, are we really doing this right now?
Right. I think a lot of it had to do with his reaction to it. But, like, I don't know. Like, it's hot outside. You don't want to be there. Like, it's just, it's tough stuff. Like, I don't know. I just thought that was him being annoyed, and he's allowed to be annoyed.
That is the truth. He is allowed to be annoyed, especially when he's had the season he had last year. He's absolutely allowed to be frustrated. And we are too. You know, that's the other part of this. It's, I try to not do this. I try to not, people are going to be bad at us no matter what.
Yeah, that's fair.
They're not listening half the time, and they make it up anyway. A lot of the people who are always going to be mad. So I don't put a ton of stock into it, but it is part of our job also to know what fans are talking about, to know, you know, what people have questions about. That is very much a piece of this. And you know that being a reporter, you know that being a reporter, Marshall, too. So Mark Grody, when Caleb Williams was on with us last Friday, asked him, because Mark is on the Bears beat, as you know, about whether or not the coverage of him and the discussion surrounding him had been fair.
Fair isn't my job to judge, you know. But I mean, I wouldn't say that there's always truth to reports that come out. Typically, to be honest with you, that come out. We're in practice. We're in training camp. yeah, we didn't maybe score as many points or anything like that last year or win as many games. But some of these reports that come out, yes, they are a little false, especially after a year that I had last year. You know, it's all right. It's everybody's job, and everybody has a job to do. And my job is to go win games. Your job may to be, you know, report and critic, good, bad, or indifferent. And, you know, there's no judge for either side.
I love that answer. Honestly, I think it was straight to the point. Like, it's not his job to be out here worried about who's being critical of him. His job is to go win football games.
Mm-hmm. I think the issue is when, if it's your family having an author of a book in your space, and you say that's not true, that's a separate discussion.
I didn't take him saying that as the book wasn't true. I took it as some reports about him over the course of his career are not true.
Yeah, like over the course of the season. That's how I took it as well. And I just, he's not a stranger to this limelight. Like, he played in the second largest market in the country in college during the NIL era, where players are treated like professionals in college more than they ever have before. And he got really used to the bright lights of LA. So coming to Chicago, I mean, there's probably more eyeballs on him here. I know there's more eyeballs on him here.
Because LA is LA.
That's not a great sports town. Sorry, guys.
They didn't have an NFL team for many years.
Yeah.
Well, now they have two.
Is there a professional football team in LA?
I always say it was USC, yeah.
Well, now they have two, and they still don't remember that they have a professional football team. Anyway,
but I lived there for two and a half years, guys.
I can say this. I just think that he is very well media trained. And he is. Like, we talked to him after some of those really tough losses last year, and he handled himself beautifully. And he's never said anything into a microphone that has been, like, really controversial or whatever. He's very methodical with the way that he speaks to the media. And that comes from years of practice, because this isn't new to him. And I do think that he really does understand, you know, this is other people's jobs. The media are full of people that are just doing their jobs. Are you going to get it wrong sometimes? Yeah. Is he going to throw a bad pass sometimes? Yeah. Like, it's the same thing. It's everybody isn't going to have 100% hit rate in their job. And him being understanding and having that answer, I think, was great.
I do, too. And I think the other piece of this is I was going to finish my thought by just saying, you know, it's one thing if it's a book and that's invited into your home.
For sure.
And that was an agreed upon partnership. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to say that, you know, I think it's unfair if it's like a net drill and we know you threw for 3,500 yards in unideal circumstances last year. You know, that's what I think, it's not fair. Have I seen any indication that he can't make the same throws that Tyson Bagent did but better yesterday? Of course. I think his passes wouldn't have been deflected as much as they were in yesterday's game. I think he can force the same ball into double coverage. I've seen him throw a hell of a fade to players in the end zone, just like Case Keenum did.
Yeah.
So I wasn't concerned about a drill like that necessarily.
No, and like Marshall brought up too, that's really not even the point of those drills. It's rapid fire. Like, can you, and like, if so, because it's rapid fire, if you have like a 25% hit rate, which I know he didn't in that one, but if you have a 25% hit rate, like, that's good. That's considered good. You know what I mean? Because you're in less than ideal circumstances. It is rapid fire. You aren't getting a good grip on the laces. You aren't being snapped it from your center in the correct way and all that kind of stuff. So I do think that there is, I'm with you, Layla. I think there's an overreaction to every little thing because there are more voices than ever. And everybody is, you know, clicks are a huge part of our industry. And that's what we are measured on so often of the time. And it's how do you get those clicks, I think, that separates certain people from others. But I understand why it happens. And it isn't fair for a lot of these athletes to be put under a microscope for something that doesn't warrant it. Which is why, like, I really appreciate the perspective myself from being with a team. Because it's like, I've seen those drills everywhere I've been. I know, like, just using that as an example, like, there's plenty of other examples of, like, well, I know that this wasn't his doing, and or this wasn't, you know, this was because of this, because that's how this works in the front office. Or, you know, he didn't talk then because it wasn't that he didn't want to talk. It was that somebody else didn't want him to talk within the building. Like, there are calculations and stuff that just, I'm rambling now, but it was, I just think that, like, there are,
it was overblown.
it was overblown, and those things happen because of the oversaturation, and those are the things that are unfair. But I don't think, in general, I think the Chicago beat really does. There's so many people on this beat. I need people to understand that. Like, I've been in giant markets. I've been in LA. I've been in smaller markets too, Tampa, Phoenix. The Chicago beat is huge, and there are so many people on it. And I think that on the whole, they do a really, really good job of trying to, you know, talk about all perspectives and see everything from every side.
No, I agree. And I do think that, yeah, you're right. There are certain, if you read the actual story and actually read it, that's a big ask for a lot of people now.
No, they just want to read social media and see little two, three sentences or one-liners. It's crazy.
It is crazy.
I think when it comes to Caleb Williams, there's an agreement there. Fans do need him to be good. Like, yeah. you can sense the desperation in the fan base, and I think that
rightfully
is
so.
Lawrence has mentioned this. We've talked about the record under Ben Johnson to start for the Lions. Do they have a 1-6 start in them? I'm still trying to figure that part out of it too.
I wouldn't be surprised because of how tough this schedule is. I mean, that's why I keep kind of preaching the whole patience aspect of all of this, because, and I think the important thing is, I don't think that's indicative of what the Ben Johnson tenure is going to be like.
No.
But I want us to have patience with this team because they did go through an overhaul both offensively and defensively. Simultaneously to that, they have a really tough start to the season. They have a tough season in general as far as schedule goes. And that is not going to, I just can't imagine it's going to look pretty. Now, I am glad to be wrong. If they go out there, all cylinders are firing, Caleb looks like he has command of the offense immediately, you know, that offensive line really pays off and they're gelling and they're already together and, you know, the skill players are running the crispest routes you've ever seen and all that kind of stuff, then I'm happy to be wrong. But all of that has to go right. And that's so hard. Like, you have to have 11 guys on the same page. And like, I get too existential about it. But sometimes I think, like, how does any play go right in football when you take into consideration all of the minute things that have to go right in order for a play to be successful? And it's wild to me because you know, like, every, like, receiver's route, the timing has to be right. The steps have to be right. He has to be in the correct position on the field. The quarterback has to have his eyes trained on, you know, his reads. He has to get through his reads at the right time. The offensive line has to have the internal clock of the quarterback and the play and knowing exactly how much time that they have to protect in order to get that ball out when it needs to go out. And like the running back has to pass protect. The tight ends have to figure out if they're attaching or if they're releasing or what, like, all of this stuff is wild to me that, like, that's why I love football so much. I'm getting, like, giddy because it's such an insane, chaotic sport that it's like an orderly chaos. And I want people to understand how difficult it is to have everything go right. And so that when you do have these offensive overhauls, the scheme comes in, new coaches come in, you have this really complex scheme that you're trying to install with a young quarterback, it's probably not going to go right in the beginning, but that's not indicative of where it's going to go.
4 weeks from tonight, you can stop your giddiness and just explode because it's going to be Vikings.
I know.
4 weeks.
What
4 weeks
is all we got. What a first test.
Monday Night Football, that's crazy.
All of that. Like, after how long we had to wait for an actual division game last year?
Yes. Yeah. That is the part, right? It's like, oh, we're not doing that again. We
got
do something.
Division guys back to back.
Yes, very different. Is there a chance Jordan Jefferson's not ready for week
Justin?
One?
Justin? Yeah.
Justin Jefferson, yes.
I would be surprised if he's not. I think that, like, they are very, very conservative with him in the preseason because, like, why? You know what Justin Jefferson can do. And basically, you know that JJ is counting on him to be down there somewhere because every quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings has been able to just say internally, F it, JJ's down there somewhere, and he usually comes down with it. So I think that they are just being, you know, he's had hamstring issues in the past, he's had soft tissue issues in the past, so it's just being super conservative. I don't see a reason why he wouldn't be out there week one. But, you know, stranger things have happened. I don't know if he suffers a setback or something like that. I just think they're being very conservative with him right now.
I just hope I can draft him in fantasy. That's what I would like to
do. I mean, you can draft him.
Well, he probably is going to go number one or number two.
Say, so. Yeah.
Yeah. It's rough.
Carmen, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Anything really quickly, I know we're up against a break, but anything we just need to be looking for that's on your mind this week?
Oh, gosh. No, I mean, I'm very interested to see then, you know, how they handle Caleb Williams in the second preseason game and how much he plays and if he's going to play the second and the third or just the third or just the second. It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I just wanted to make sure. I don't know if there's some NFL team that's doing something right now that you might say, look for this.
Mm, no, the Packers are Matthew Golden might be the truth.
Then that's a hell of a draft pick, even for being a first rounder.
Yeah. I mean, it's the first time they've done it since 2005, 1995.
Yeah, it's not well. 2005 was Aaron Rodgers. So
it was way before that. Yeah. It must have been 1995.
Woo.
It's been a long time.
That is Carmen Vitale. You can catch her work on Fox and also, of course, well, foxsports.com and also, of course, on Marquee Sports Network. And we want to do a giveaway, guys. Caller 6, let's do it. Score contest line 312-540-0670, 312-540-0670. We'll win a pair of general admission tickets to see Blink-182, Weird Al, Alkaline Trio, Rilo Kiley, The Pogues, and more at Riot Fest on Friday, September 19th. We have more coming up on Raheem and Harris. You're listening on the Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Raheem and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
This is very Bears music. I feel like it's an appropriate Bears piece of production value from Robbie Triano. Thanks again to Carmen Vitale for coming in. Like we mentioned, you can catch her work on the Marquee Sports Network's The Chicago Football Show podcast. And she is an NFL reporter, as we know, for Fox Sports. This is Raheem and Harris on 670 The Score. And we always like to end our show with something fun. And there was definitely a fun moment that happened in Sunday's game. If you missed it, I love that during preseason games, the booth is allowed to interview players. They'll put the headsets on them on the sideline. And Stacey Dales asked a fun question to Rome Odunze.
Rome, work with me on this one. Somebody on your staff told me that if you and DJ had a baby, it would be Luther Burden. Because of the skill sets that you both
right.
bring.
Right, right, yeah.
Because of your contested ability and run after the catch and because of...
Yeah.
Your speed, and then because of DJ's obviously ability to be incredibly versatile. I guess the point is, what have you seen from Luther Burden that he's adding?
Man, he's a playmaker. I see, you know, when people make that analysis, you know, he has a great combination of skills. You know, he can make a play down the field. He can make, you know, as soon as he gets the ball in his hands, he, you know, has that DJ-esque make people miss and get loose. So he's shown a lot to us, you know, in the little time, you know, that he's been able to be out there and be live and make plays. So, you know, the sky's the limit for him on his potential, but he's just continuing to grow.
The laughter from Rome.
If you and DJ had a baby, it would be Luther Burden.
That laugh, like, we've just got to isolate that laugh. Why did I feel like when I watched the game, I felt like it went on for even longer than that?
Yeah, because it was the face that he was making as he was absorbing the question, as he's processing it, and you're like, oh my goodness, what is he gonna say? But he got it, caught it, and he ran with it. Much like the top flight receiver, he's like, I see what you're trying to do here. I'm going to just roll with it.
It really was only that long? Robbie, really? That's hilarious. Well, I felt like it lasted 10 years in my head.
I love the miking up of players on the sideline. And like, I don't know if you watch any, like, what's it? They don't call it XFL anymore. What do they call it now? Is it XFL?
I think it is.
Okay. Well, they just mic people up the whole game, like much akin to Pete Crow Armstrong last night.
I did not like having Pete Crow Armstrong mic'd up last night because you also know something epic is happening when everything goes silent. Like, did you notice that on the Pajes home run? I was like, oh no. And then he just climbs the wall so easily,
right.
Like Spider-Man.
Yeah, it was like Bo Jackson-esque the way he was like running up the wall.
And then I'm pretty sure it hit somebody in the head. Did you notice that?
There I didn't see that part.
When it fell, there were Cubs fans, and I think the ball might have hit somebody in the head, or at least the shoulder. Someone got plunked.
Hopefully it's the shoulder, not the head, because, you know, one causes concussions, the other does not.
That is fair. But, yeah, I had a good laugh at Roman Dunze reacting to DJ Moore and Luther Burden and him and how that plays out.
Rome is funny, man.
He is.
Rome is a funny dude.
I appreciated his comments during the non-football obsession question when he went off on, like, seven different things.
He has a lot of things he's working on right now. The Reels is hilarious. I was like... He made it sound like Reels was like this new thing, right? On Instagram.
It was such a troll of old people like us. You know, Instagram Reels. Like, no, you did not, Rome.
You think he was trolling us?
Yes. Dang. I think the best trolls are the ones who are nice about it and funny.
The subtle slight. I'm just saying what's on my mind. And if you take offense to this, I'm probably talking about you.
If we had more than 9 minutes with Caleb Williams, I would have asked him about F1.
I can't believe you only got 9 minutes. Maybe next time. Get 20 minutes. Maybe. It's possible.
That was a lot of moving parts. That's what that was.
That's okay. But you got him on. That's the important thing. And we now get to see him possibly, Layla, play Sunday night in primetime.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would be lovely.
Let's give some more stuff away, shall we?
Let's.
Caller 6 to the Score contest line, 312-540-0670. That contest line again, 540-0670. We'll win a pair of tickets to see the Cubs take on Atlanta at Wrigley Field on Monday, September 1st. It is powered by Bosch Power Tools. The more you Bosch, the more you feel like a Bosch.
You know the Braves have the fifth worst record in baseball?
Talk about a collapse.
It's been the Sox are only 8 games behind them in the standings. They could probably catch them if they don't have any more 6-game losing streaks.
I think you owe the crew money.
What did I do now?
You bet that the Sox weren't going to have as many, what was it, 47 and a half?
They're not there yet. They only have 43 wins. They're not there yet.
They will be.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Okay. Are you kidding?
6 straight losses is a lot.
It's August 11th. They're not going to lose 21 games in a row. They already did.
They couldn't do it again?
Not this team.
Okay. Colt Montgomery keeps swinging like he's been swinging. I'm good with it.
I don't think I can physically fathom 115 miles an hour off the bat. This is 14 and a half, but still.
You don't have to fathom it. You can just replay it from yesterday.
But can you imagine, like, looking at that? Like, PCA talked about how 104 was fast, and you really do get to judge a ball when you're in the outfield. Like, Doug Glanville has talked to me about that. That's a wild amount of speed.
My favorite old home runs are when the fielder doesn't move. Like, so Mark McGwire hits a home run to left, and the fielder doesn't turn or anything.
I know it's gone.
Looking straight at home plate still. Same thing like Bonds to a degree. Junior, Ken Griffey Jr.
Oh, yeah.
Like, some of those guys would hit monster home runs.
I'd see. My closest experience with that, like in person, was when Giancarlo Stanton was still Mike Stanton at the time.
Ooh.
And he was in batting practice. And we were all just standing there like, I don't know how to explain what I'm seeing right now. I'm like, where's the ball going?
Yeah.
Where are they going?
Similar to
500 feet away is where they were going.
Not the version of Adam Dunn that you guys got here, but the version I saw in Cincinnati doing the same types of things in BP.
Now you're trolling the Sox.
No,
fans.
I'm saying not. I am a Sox fan. Like, I'm just saying not the version that you got here.
You're trolling yourself.
It's a self troll. Not to be confused with a self check. But yeah, like, who doesn't love a batting practice display? That's amazing.
Oh, they're so fun. It's better when it's in a game, though, like what Colson Montgomery did yesterday.
Sox weren't doing that the first half of the season. Now they hit home runs all the time.
Which is why I'm confident that they're going to get the 4.5 wins I need them to get.
And I got to pay a lot of people a dollar, too. And it's not just me. It's Lawrence, too.
Yeah, well, that's what you get for giving your money to everybody.
Wow. Didn't you just give $2 to Robbie?
I did.
Yeah, one of them was off the ground.
When the ground gives, you accept it.
She did not sanitize that dollar, by the way.
No,
she
not just... at all. Full of ground germs, and it was by that pizza you found.
The pizza was from 2021.
At least she didn't eat the pizza.
It was a very old dollar bill.
I told you that there was a pile of pizzas behind that support post. I'm like, what happened here?
Not good things.
We'll never know. There's no way to know. Maybe Lawrence knows. He and Matt Spiegel are next.